Good evening. Welcome back to Cultivating Hearts. We're at our new time slot at 4:30, and we're excited about that. Last week, we were in Luke 23, 26 through 49, and we talked about Simon, and he was chosen to carry Jesus' cross. And we will continue this week with Tara Rye. Yay. And Shelley is in the studio with us, and we are excited to learn more about
what's happening.
And what's happening.
Amen. Let's do it. Okay, so let's recap and let's just give a, so that we can go back and see all that we have looked at. Okay, we're talking at the crucifixion. So we have Jesus going up, and in the process of going up, we have Simon appointed to be the one to carry the cross. We have the crowds following. We have the women wailing. We have Jesus prophesying over the people. Even though he's been bruised and beaten, he prophesies over the people and actually tells them what's coming for Jerusalem. And then they put two criminals on either side, and the rulers are sneering at him, and the soldiers are mocking him, and the criminal is insulting him. And one criminal actually says, you know, he's innocent. Jesus, remember me. And then all the earth, Jesus says, I will remember you. Then all the earth goes dark. Jesus says, Father, for into your hands I commit my spirit. And then he's gone. And then it says that the people that were watching, they beat their breasts. And the centurion says, surely he must have been a righteous man. So that gives an encapsulation what we just looked at. Wow. That was pretty amazing. I didn't know I could do that in that
short of time.
That was really good, Tara.
It was a fast one. That was the quick track, in case anybody needed the quick track. But we need to help us catch up with where we're at. And last week, we talked about Simon and who he was. But this week, what I want us to focus in on, I want you guys to see who all was there. I just told it to you, because I wanted it to be in your mind. But go back and let's remember, who are all the people present that we can think of? And I'll help you, so don't worry. Let's just dialogue.
You're talking about the disciples?
Well, they were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were there. Who else was there?
Roman soldiers.
We just told. Okay. Yeah, in this passage, going up to the cross.
Well, we have Simon, mm-hmm. but then we have the women.
Yeah, the wailing women.
And Centurion guy.
The centurion. Yes. Very good. Very good. Yeah. And so here we have different people groups that are observing what is going on. And one group was a group of bystanders. They were the people that were in the crowd that were following along. Simon was one of the bystanders. Mm-hmm. He was there just watching. But because of a Roman soldier, he ended up being one of the participants. Now, there was also the group that was wailing. Okay, historically, you just got to get this. This is during their time, there was a group of women that went along that wailed whenever a funeral was going on. And in particular with the crucifixion, they went along to offer vinegar wine to lessen the pain of what they were going to endure. It was kind of like their ministry. And so that's most likely what this group of women was, they suspect. We have the religious leaders that are present. We have the Roman, you know, guards that are there. And then we have disciples. We know the disciples are there because when he's on the cross and some mm-hmm. of the other passages, we have Jesus telling John, you know, here's your mom, mm-hmm. you know, and stuff. And so they're watching. They know what's going on. But in Luke's account, he doesn't really reference the disciples so much. It's mm-hmm. about the other people that are watching. And I was just telling Shelley and Sandy that, you know, God just gave me a poignant moment where he reminded me we're always being watched. There's always people that are watching. And one day I'll share my story because I think you guys can relate just how easy it is to be watched. My family walked into a Chick-fil-A, and I don't really remember what it was, but my entire family, all five of us, were whiny, gripey, and quite honestly at each other's throats. I mean, it was not a pretty mm-hmm. sight. It wasn't a pretty scene. And we're standing in a public restaurant, in a public place, in a public line, waiting to get our chicken sandwiches or our chicken nuggets, or in Michaela's case, her French fries and salad. And all of a sudden, this girl, one person in front of me, turns and she looks and she goes, "Aren't you Tara Rye that did the Grace Women's Conference?" And I just froze. Conviction, I mean, just like fell all over me. And she goes, "And you're her daughter that did the worship dance." And I was like, oh, Lord, I have people watching no matter where I'm at. Not that that should be the reason how we behave, mm-hmm. but the thing is that whatever is going on, there are always going to be people mm-hmm. observing. And here we have the crowds observing, watching and seeing what's going on. And Jesus's body is horrific. I mean, he is so abused that he cannot carry his beam. By law, they had a requirement, and I'm trying to remember, I can't remember which theologian had said it, but I have a quote in the book about that they state that every criminal that will go to the crucifixion must be the one who carries his cross. So the fact that somebody was appointed to carry his cross tells us that his body was so beaten mm-hmm. that he could not bear the load.
We started to watch The Passion of the Christ mm-hmm. the other night, and just the beginning, I watched about 5 minutes of it, and I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And even my son was just a thing that, mm-hmm. I mean, he just was like, it's so disturbing, you know, for him, and it's just like, it is. And just to even imagine, like, his mother. Mm, I mean, and as a mother, to even, you know, we hurt when our children hurt if they have a little boo-boo, mm-hmm, you know. And just to, I can't even,
yeah,
it just crushes my soul to think about it.
And I love the scene of, in The Passion, where the mom is just broken and they show her, you know, watching him.
Mm-hmm. I am like, I can't do this. We turned it off after, I think, he was arrested. And then I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah. No, I didn't even watch it this year.
I watched it once. I can't. Once was enough for me. I honestly grieved. I can't even. I think I was. It took 3 weeks before I felt like I could shake it off.
That's how I was the first time. I'm like, I can't do this to myself again. And we even got like the kiddie version, and it's not a kiddie version, but you know, the one that's less graphic.
Right.
Like I mean, just to see the pain
when
he was in the garden and just the terror.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. It was.
Because he's your best friend.
Yeah.
Just think it was worse than that, you know.
I know.
They can't even depict. Right. Mm-mm. They just can't even. And so here he is. He's going up. And thinking all that you just described in his pain. And the women are wailing. And he turns and he looks at them and he says, don't weep for me. I'm like, really? He's not even thinking about himself. Even in his suffering that he is bearing, he says, you need to be weeping for yourself because something worse is coming. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then he says something really unusual. I had to reread this, and then research it to really get the full measure of it. He says, daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your children. For the time will come when you will say, blessed are the barren women, the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed. And then they will say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if men do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when it is dry? What he is saying is a green tree does not burn.
Right.
Okay, that's the whole point. A green tree is life and moisture, and it's the giving water. A tree is nourishment in that capacity, okay? Whereas a dried up branch burns very easily. It's very quickly consumed, very quickly gone when a fire touches it. Jesus is the living water. He is the tree of life. He is the life-giving nourishment, okay? And he is in his green innocence, his purity, the fulfillment of everything that God ever intended for us. He is that. And yet man chose to do what man chose to do to him, and piercing him, cursing him, you know, rejecting him. And so if they rejected the green tree, what are they going to do when the tree is dead? Okay, that's the whole point. What is about to come, it's going to get much, much worse. And some commentators talk about that it's actually a prophecy that's coming to when Jerusalem is actually going to be destroyed because of the Roman soldiers under Nero. It's also looking towards that as well. So here he's in his greatest suffering, and he still finds time to prepare. Yeah, prepare the people.
The whole thing. He's just looking out for others the whole time. Yeah. He's loving everybody around him during that pain.
Yeah. And that is taking up your cross. Mm. Okay? Do you see how it would be so easy? And I wrote in my notes in my journal when I was praying through this and writing about it that I'm like, God, when I'm in pain, I am irritated and I'm annoyed. And the last thing I want is to be thinking about somebody else because I'm so into me.
My pain. Mm-hmm.
Yes, what I am dealing with, that it's difficult for me to get outside of my senses and my emotions from what I'm experiencing. And I know in my life, as I've gone back and looked at different crisis points in my life, when I was a younger person, I can look back and see how I was so into self through a crisis. But as I have matured in Christ, in the big stuff, I can see how he's at work. Mm-hmm. It's the little things that, you know, I'm more mm-hmm. apt to trip up in. But here he is all out. I'm here for you. And even as I'm going up to knowing they're getting ready to nail me, listen, prepare yourself. Get your heart ready because the worst is yet to come. Mm-hmm. It hasn't happened yet. And that just, Lord, you know, mankind, the choices we've made, it just blows my mind away. And it's actually in Hosea 10:8 and Revelation 6:15 through 17 references this. And so in this particular section of the crucifixion, I had told you at the end of last show that I was going to begin to show you that there are testimonies that are taking place. Well, this is one of the things that was prophesied, what would be coming, and it was fulfilled, and that he prophesied even while, you know, this is taking place. And some of the other prophecies that were taking place is that, one, the hanging on the cross, the criminal being hung amongst criminals, the casting of lots for his clothes. Mm. All of these things are things that were already written about long before it ever occurred and proclaimed that these would take place. And the fulfillment of them are happening as this event is unfolding. And so as we look at these crowds, we have to understand that they are actually eyewitnesses to what occurred. Legally, by law, and I think this is still what we require today, you have to have a witness of three for it to be a valid testimony. I mean, that tends to be, you know, if you have three people, and how many times, Sandy, you've probably heard me say this a lot. I heard it on the radio, and then the preacher preached it, and then I read it in my devotional. I heard it three times. I got to pay attention. God's speaking to me.
Well, and they also say in order for us to remember something,
it has to be repeated.
You have to hear it three times.
Okay. So
God uses repetition in the Bible all the time.
He does.
You know, I love that.
He does. But in this thing, what we have to see is that there are witnesses that proclaim he is who he is. Mm-hmm. And the first account occurs is when the religious leaders. Here, let me see if I can get my tongue on you, Kate. Okay. So the people are watching in verse 35, Luke 23:35. It says, the people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. And they said, he saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Christ of God, the chosen one. And so here we have the religious leaders. They're giving testimony to his title. Then we have the soldiers. The soldiers say, and they came up and they mocked him and they offered him wine vinegar. And they said, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. And then we get to the criminal. And he says, one of the criminals on verse 39 says, who hung there? He hung there and he insulted him. Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us. These three groups all testify to him as Son of God, Christ of God, the Christ, which are the titles given. And even though it is done in mockery, they are bearing testimony to his identity. Right. And so by bearing testimony to his identity, they are actually validating what happened on the cross. Mm-hmm. And the crazy thing is that, you know, usually you want somebody that's on your side to be the one that bears testimony to who you are. Here they are bearing testimony to who he is, and they're not even for him. And they're providing the validity of his identity. Not only that, a criminal, it was required that when they were hung on a cross, that their crime or the charge that they have against them be hung above their head. Hmm. With Jesus, there was no crime. He was innocent. So they named him his identity, the King of the Jews. They gave him his own identity as the identifier. They didn't even place on the cross his crime because there was no crime. He was an innocent man. And so the people were able to totally hear who he was. The test is his identity. That's the whole test. He came for the purpose to glorify the Father. He came with the purpose to do the will of the Father. He came for the purpose to fulfill God's will, which was to save all of mankind, that all sin would be forgiven and man could draw near to God. Now, with all that, we have reminders, and we've looked at this, and this is the fun part about seeing that in each of these seven moments, in his baptism, God said, "This is my Son, whom I love, and I am well pleased." At the Transfiguration, "This is my Son, whom I have chosen. Listen to him." God has already identified him. These people were eyewitnesses to hear these things. So they have been given testimony through God. So they weren't ignorant of his name. And here they're bearing testimony to his name. Is that fun?
That's neat.
And they're affirming it. So the eyewitness account validates what occurred. This is not mythology. This is truth. And historically, Josephus records it. And different historians talk about it as well. And so this is not something that was not a truth. And so we have the validation of what happened on the cross that day by the people that were against him, not the people that were for him. And that right there validates it even more, because why would they want to call him by his name and make it even more evident? And I think that's amazing. We're so glad you're listening. We want you to come back, because next week we're going to look at how by their testimonies and talking about how you save yourself, they're actually showing that Jesus is the Savior, and he's the one that will provide salvation. God bless.